Good morning. We begin today's daf Tes Zayin, Maseches Bava Metzia. We begin by thanking all of our sponsors. We thank all of our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Ad Hasheni. We thank the Schwartzbaum family for dedicating and for sponsoring all the shiurim of this month in memory of Aaron J. Schwartzbaum, Aaron Yosef Ben Meir, may his neshama have an aliyah. We also thank Leah Saul for sponsoring and dedicating all of the shiurim of this month in the zchus of her daughter Alana Bas Esther's successful surgery and a complete refuah shlema for a safe return of all of our hostages. We also thank Maya Hoffman for dedicating and sponsoring all the shiurim of this month in memory of her father, Reuven Ben Emmanuel, the merit of Hatzlacha and health and joy of her, all of her family, Shulamit, Avram, Mariasha Tzivia, Barak Rafael, and Dora. We also thank Yael and Sarah Kelman for sponsoring all the shiurim and dedicating all the shiurim of this month in honor of the birth of their son in memory of Staff Sergeant David Sassoon Hashem Kemdamai, who was only 21 years old and was killed fighting in Gaza on March 6, 2024. The merit of all of our Talmud Torah, all the neshama should have an aliyah, all the cholim should have refuah, and all those need Yeshua should have a Yeshua. Today's daf is daf Tes Zayin, and we are picking up at the two dots, somewhere around a little bit more than 10 lines down on daf Tes Zayin. So just a quick reminder of what we were talking about yesterday, because today's Gemara is directly linked to that. We are discussing a case where a goslin, a thief, sold a field to somebody else. And then subsequently goes and he buys the field from its rightful owner. And then the Gemara spent time yesterday trying to psychoanalyze this guy. Like, why did he buy it? What was up with that? Why did the guy buy it? He stole the field originally and he sold the field. So it seems like, from this guy's perspective, he's done. He's got the best of both worlds. He didn't have to pay for the field when he originally got it, and he made money off of it. So what's going through his mind now when he goes ahead and he buys the field? So yesterday we went through this Gemara fairly quickly because it was the end of the shiur. But just to quickly remind ourselves, the Gemara told us that when the thief sells the field to the subsequent buyer, he sells it in kol sechus shetava liyada. He's selling the sechus, he's selling the field not only with the rights or lack thereof that he has to the field today, but he's selling every right he eventually may acquire with regard to this field. And therefore, when he goes ahead and subsequently buys it from the person that he stole it from, then he's buying it to transfer those rights to the person who bought it from him. Now the Gemara wants to know, why would he do this? What's his motivation to do this? The Gemara asked, why would he do that? The Gemara gave two possible explanations. Both of them are very similar. One of them is, he doesn't want to be called a thief. Although he is a thief, and although he probably has to acknowledge that he's a thief, it's very painful to have to be called a thief and to be publicly called a thief. So therefore, despite the fact that, as we mentioned before, he got what he wanted, he got the money for the field, again, he doesn't want to be called a thief. It's very embarrassing to be called a thief. The other one was that he doesn't want to ruin his reputation. He doesn't want his name to be dragged through the mud. So when it comes out that the field is determined to be stolen, and then everyone knows about it, it's very embarrassing. Actually, I'll just share a quick anecdote. A number of years ago, when I bought my first used car. So I went to one of these wonderful people. Everyone knows used car salesmen have the best name out there. But either way, I bought a car from this guy. And one morning, I was actually in shul, in the middle of davening. And a guy comes in and says, anybody own a blue Toyota Camry? So now, in Lakewood, New Jersey, where I was at that point in time, everyone got up out of their seat, because who doesn't have a blue Toyota Camry? It turns out it was mine. And I went outside, still wearing my Taliesin's tefillin, and there were a bunch of cops around my car. And it turns out, my car was being taken away, because my car was stolen. And they said to me, sir, we'll take your car, you know, we're going to bring it back to the proper owner. The car belongs to somebody in Florida. This car's been stolen from Florida. Now, the truth of the matter is that it was my car. I bought it. I had the receipt. I paid for the car. And the problem really was that the car was repossessed by Toyota and then sold off to some used car dealer who sold it to me. But somewhere in the paperwork, while Toyota had repossessed it, the Department of Motor Vehicles never acknowledged that the vehicle was taken back by Toyota. And it was, and the VIN number still tracked back to the original person who reported it stolen the morning that the repo guy came and took it. Now, why am I mentioning this story? Because I remember at the time, I bought it from a Jewish car salesman. And it said on the back of the car, they put like their logo on the back of the car. And I remember he called me and he said to me, "What is going on? Why am I getting 100 phone calls that I'm selling stolen cars?" So I told him, "Well, actually, you did." Well, because at that point in time, you know, my car was, it was impounded. My car was gone. But you see that there, you know, the guy happens to be an honest guy. But ultimately, the shame of being called a ganav, when all this, everyone finds out, there's this scene, people come, they take away the field. The ganav stole the field. And he made money off the field. But to have people call him a ganav is something he just doesn't want to have to deal with. So therefore, at a certain point, he says, "You know what? I made money off the field. It's true that I stole it, but to avoid the public shaming, number one, of my reputation, number two, to be called a gazlan is just very unpleasant," and therefore he wanted to buy it back. That was yesterday's Gemara. The Gemara gave a couple differences between these two different opinions, but that's ultimately...
Did you get the car back?
I got the car back. Yeah. I had to pay the impound fee until I got it back, but I was able to get it back a couple days later. You know, I guess one more anecdote while we're on the topic. When I was in Eretz Yisrael as a bachur, we lived in this bachur dira, this apartment, and we had just extremely expensive water bills. We just couldn't figure out why are our water bills so expensive. You know, 6 or 7 guys living in an apartment. Okay, we took showers. But that expensive? Until we discovered that our next door neighbor didn't have a legal apartment. What better idea than to just like connect your water source to your next door neighbor? Perfect. Made a lot of sense. And we watched how they outside, there's just like one of these like homemade pipes that just connected straight to our water line. So one day, you know, we just turned, on the way out, we all left, we turned off the water. There's a little knob outside, we turned off the water. And we get a phone call from the owner, the landlord of the next door. "What are you doing? Why are you turning off the water? My tenant in the apartment couldn't do laundry, they couldn't cook." Well, we said, "Well, it's our water." Anyway, he felt that he has the rights to the water. I remember at the point in time, he was literally stealing our water. And we had to pay for it for months. At a point in time, I think it was me actually, one of us said to him, "You know, you're a ganav. You're taking our water and we have to pay for it." At that moment, he lost it. Absolutely lost it. "You call me a ganav? You know who I am, a ganav." Well, actually, yes. That's what you're doing. You're taking the water, you're not paying for it, and he had no plans to pay for it. But again, the idea, even though he was a ganav, you call him a ganav. When someone hears he's called a ganav, it's just, it comes, it's such a heavy term to use. "I'm a thief? Really?" You know, there's all types of things that people sometimes would do. "What's the big deal? It's a little bit of water. I'm just taking it. These guys are a bunch of American bachram anyway. What do they care? A couple extra $100 and some water. They can handle it. Nothing, they're not going to go broke off of that." And the moment you realize, hey, I'm a ganav. So that's when the person says, "You know, let's try to make this right." That's what the Gemara was talking about. The guy is a ganav. He stole the field. And he sold the field afterwards. But ultimately, he doesn't want to be called a ganav. Now, in today's Gemara, Gemara is going to continue that discussion. But it's going to be interesting. The Gemara seems to start off, and we'll see this in a minute, really just going with the other reason about his reputation. He seems to be worried about his reputation. So we're going to start today with Pshita. Zavna orta v'yavu b'matana. The Gemara now is trying to understand when this, let's just call him what he is, this thief goes ahead and buys the field, and we're psychoanalyzing this guy, why did he buy it again? So the Gemara says, if he sold the field to this original buyer, and then before he went and bought the field legitimately, he sold it again. So this guy's out of his, mind. He buys it, he steals it, sells it. Now remember, that sale, we're going to discuss later, is really not a sale. He's selling the Brooklyn Bridge, he doesn't own it. But again, the Gemara says it's obvious, Pshita Zavna, you sold it again, Orta, or he inherited it to his children, V'yavav Matana, or he gave it as a gift to somebody else, and then afterwards, he goes ahead and buys it. The Gemara says, Lav l'uk mikam l'keach kabay. His motivation is not like this, the original buyer can be able to legitimately own it. Because if he legitimately was trying to make things right, it's like this, the subsequent buyer can actually legally own the field that he bought, he wouldn't have gone ahead to circumvent that by giving it or selling it to another person. So he's bringing in a third party, should say a fourth party into the sale. Clearly he's not motivated by making it right for the first buyer. Gemara says, Nafalei b'Yerusha, then what happens if the guy who stole the field, he stole it from a relative that he was slated to inherit? So he stole it, let's just say he stole the fields from his father. Unfortunately, those kinds of things can happen. His father may have been getting old. His father couldn't really take care of his stuff anymore, so he just took his father's field. He took it without paying for it. Now he sold it, and then his father passed away. Now his father passes away, he inherits his father, so now the field is legitimately owned by the thief. So the question is, in that case, can we really say that he went out of his way to go buy or to acquire the fields like this, the buyer will legitimately own it? The Gemara says, Nafle b'Yerusha, well, Yerusha memelehi, v'lav iu katara chavasra. So therefore, there's no reason to say that now that he owns it legitimately, he has any intention to actually pass it on to the lokeach, like this, the buyer will legitimately own it. However, gavi iu b'chovo, if he collected that field as payment for a loan that he's owed, then the Gemara says it depends. Chazina, we have to analyze this. I isli arachriti v'amar haibo'ina, then l'uk makami lokeach kavoy. If this thief also lent money to another person, and the person never paid him back. So now the thief goes and says, sir, you legitimately owe me money, and I'd like to collect your real estate instead. Now, if the debtor, the one who owes the money, actually owns lots of real estate, and he intentionally says, I would like to collect that field that I sold to that person, so the fact that he's choosing that field indicates that the reason why he wants that field is because he wants to be able to create legitimacy to the sale that he made earlier, he's doing it to benefit the lokeach. V'ilo, if not, if the guy doesn't have any other fields, is the only one, zuzi hu deboya frui. That's what he wants. He wants his money. Therefore, he collects whatever he can get his hands on. Gemara says, yava nalei b'matana. What if the victim of the theft decided to ultimately give the field to the thief as a gift? So there are pligi bar of Achav Ravina. Rav Ach and Ravina argue about what how we view that. Chadamar matana kirusha, the hamamela. One of them says, just like when it comes to inheritance, he had nothing to do with it. He didn't go out of his way to try to substantiate his legal ownership over this field. So like this, the buyer could actually legitimately own the field. It happened by itself. So matana is the same thing. A person decides to give you a gift. You've done nothing to actually earn that gift. It was just given to you. But Chadam, the other one, says it's not true. Matana kamecha. Matana is much more similar to actually going out of your way to buy it. De'ilav de'tarach v'artzi kamei lo havayav le'matana. Nobody gets a free gift. You have to have done something to indicate that this is what you want. You have to actually earn the gift somehow. Doesn't mean you bought it, doesn't mean you paid for it, but people don't just show up to people's house and say, oh, by the way, I want to let you know, I bought you a house. That's just not how it works. If someone's going to give you a gift of real estate, there must have been something that you've done, number one, to deserve it, and number two, to indicate that that's what you want. So it's much more similar to a mekach where the person went ahead and bought it. Now the Gemara goes on to explain the
Yevchad Amar Matana Kemecher Deilav Detarach Varzi Kamei Lo Haviyav Leib Matana Lahachi. Therefore, Tarach Varzi Kamei. That's why he went out of his way to appease him. Is Ki Hechi Deleikum Behemenuse. The Gemara seems to go with that reason. The Gemara seems to say the reason why he went out of his way to try to convince this person to give him this field as a gift is because he wanted to be able to protect his reputation. Amar Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, I'm sorry, we skipped a line. V'ad emes, the Gemara asked the question, V'ad emes, until what point in time do we assume that a person is purchasing this field because he wants to protect his reputation? In other words, you can't say this goes on forever, so at what point in time do we say he wants to do that? V'ad emes nichle d'leke v'emnuse, Amar Rav Huna ad shasam ad b'din, until he ultimately gets taken to court. At that point in time, if after he's taken to court, and based in, he's already being held responsible for the fact that he stole the field, at that point in time, then he goes ahead and buys it, so then it's too late. His reputation he clearly wasn't so concerned about his reputation, and therefore if he's buying it, he's not buying it because he wants to help out the lokeach. Chia Barav, Amar Chia Barav says, Adamata Adrachta Liyadeh. It's not until he's taken to court, he gives him some more time. It's until the actual document that says he has to give up the field makes it to his hand. At that point in time, he can no longer say that he's trying to protect his reputation and what he's doing it on behalf of the lokeach. And Rav Papa Amar Ad de Mischalin Yomei Achor Zasa, until the days of announcement start happening. What does that mean? So basically, there's three steps over here. Step number one is a person's taken to court. He's summoned to face it. The second one is, after the legal proceedings, is going to be a psak that's given, and then there's a point in time when the basin starts making announcements that the fields are for sale. So it's three different stages in this process, and the Gemara has machlokas. At what point in time the person can still say he's trying to protect his reputation, and he's buying it to legitimize the sale that he sold to this first person. Now the Gemara asks a very simple, fundamental question. Maskuf la, Rami Bar Papa, Mechdi. Let's take a look and analyze this. In other words, we spent a lot of time trying to understand what went through the mind of this thief. And we're ultimately determining that when he buys the field from the person he stole it from, he's buying it because he wants the original sale of when he sold the field to this innocent purchaser to be legitimate. The problem just is, there's a technical issue. The buyer never bought the field. He was sold the Brooklyn Bridge. If I sell you someone else's house, I could do whatever I want, all kinds of acrobatics, but ultimately the bottom line is, I didn't sell anything to you. That's Gemara's question right now. How does he actually acquire this field? Bahai Shtara, with that original contract that he signed to buy that field? Hai Shtara Chasma B'Amahu. This shtar is a chasma, it's a piece of broken pottery. In other words, it's a piece of garbage. He bought something, he has a shtar that says he bought a field from someone who doesn't own the field. So very nice, later he wanted to buy it, but at the end of the day there was no kinyan, nothing happened. And when he tried to make a kinyan, the whole thing was just a clown show, because the guy was selling someone else's field. So very nice, he tries to substantiate it, but the bottom line is, he never sold the field. Rava responded and said, Tehei b'mamino. This works with an element of trust. In other words, he says, b'ahu hana, with that pleasure, d'lo ka'amarle midi, v'kasamach aleha tarach omaisi le v'gamar umakni le. The Gemara says, this thief, again, he has dignity. He appreciates the fact that this buyer trusted him. The way that Tosfos says this is, "B'havi ki'ilu amarlei," it's as if he said to him, "Sada zu kitei kenuy lecha likisha ekne." In other words, you rely on me, you trust me. I appreciate that I have your trust. That trust that he gave him at the time that he actually signed this really useless contract—that is the item of value that he gave him that allows him to actually buy the field. That pleasure that he has, that this guy trusts me, doesn't call me a thief, he relies on me, that I will ultimately do everything I can
to be able to legitimately bring this field to his ownership, that's enough. Now, it's as if he said to him, L'chishe ekne, when I actually really buy it, or she said, L'chishe ekochena, when I'm going to buy it, that's when it's going to ultimately be yours. The problem just with this is, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but Tosfos seems to take the approach at the beginning of the sugya, that when the guy bought it, he didn't know it was stolen. If he knew it was stolen, it's a whole other set of problems. So I don't know how consistent it is, but ultimately, whether or not the buyer actually had that in mind, still, the seller, this thief, still received that pleasure. This guy's relying on me, he trusts me, and the fact that he's trusting on me is enough, he's trusting me, that's enough for him to actually be given an item of value at the time of the sale. The Gemara says, okay, very nice. So that's how it works. He gives him pleasure at the time of the sale, and ultimately later, when he really buys it and really owns it, then he's going to be able to get it. The Gemara says, most of Sheshes. So Sheshes asks the following question. What happens if a person says, Ma she'irish mi abba machor lecha? What I will ultimately inherit from my father will be sold to you. Or Ma she'tala mitzudasi, what my trap will eventually catch, person puts traps down into the sea, and he hopes that his traps bring up a lot of fish, what my traps will eventually catch, machor lecha, is sold to you. Gemara says, lo amar klum, it's nothing, because nothing going on there. However, what I will inherit from my father today, in other words, the person says, I have a reality check, my father's life is coming to an end, and he knows that his father is going to be dying that day. See, at the end of his life, he's a goses. So what I'm going to get from my father today, machor lach, I'm selling to you. Or, what my trap is going to pick up today, machor lach is sold to you, dvar of kayamim. His words actually are going to work, and the sale takes place. The Gemara is going to explain the difference between these two cases later. So now, the problem is, you see from the first half of this, that even though I know something will eventually come, if it's not here today, I can't sell it. We're going to see the discussion of a person sells something, shelo bala olam, davar shelo bala olam, you sell something which is not here, the sale doesn't work. So how is it that I could say that the field is sold to this innocent buyer over here because later I'm going to acquire it? Amar Rabbi Bar Chama, hi Gavra. He says, wow, Rav Sheshes, this is really a Gavra. He's a very special person. Vahat Yufta. This is a real legitimate refutation of what we were saying. In other words, it can't possibly be that he's selling him something that he doesn't yet own. It won't work. Amarava, Rava responded, and he said, Gavra Kachazina. I see a very special person in Rav Sheshes. He actually asked a very good question. However, Vitiyufta lo Kachazina. There's no refutation over here. And he explains, Hacha sam chadaite. In our case of selling the field, he relied on him. He trusted him. Vahacha, in the case of selling something that you'll eventually come to own, lo sam chadaite. He doesn't rely on him. Which, without getting too deep into the sugya of Davar Shlo Bala Olam, this Gemara happens to be a big source that the problem of selling something which doesn't yet exist is whether or not I rely on the fact that the thing's going to come into existence. That's how the Gemara seems to differentiate between the two cases, is do I rely on the fact that it will ultimately come? The Gemara says, Hacha sam chadaiti, hacha lo sam chadaiti, hacha sam chadaiti da'azul v'tarach u'maisile. In this case, he relies on the fact the guy will get it for him. He knows the person has his motivation, which is interesting. Earlier, the Gemara went with the reason of protecting his reputation. Over here it says, the buyer knows that he's going to ultimately get it, because he does. Everyone wants to make sure that no one calls them bad names. No one wants to be called a goslin, and therefore he says, if this guy doesn't really, really get a hold of the field, he's going to go down in the books as a goslin, and that's something he doesn't want. So I know I can rely on the fact he doesn't want to be called a goslin, and he'll get it from me. In this case, where he's making the sale, he doesn't rely on him because, again, he's not a goslin. He may have sold something and never got his hands on it, but he didn't steal it either.
Shalchot l'kameid Rav Abba bar Zavta. Amar lohu, they sent the same thing, the same question to Rabbi Abba bar Zavta. Amar lohu, he said to them, Zu ein etzricha lefnim. This is such a good question. Ein etzricha lefnim. You don't even have to bother bringing it to the base medrash because it's a tiyufta, it's a refutation. Amar Rava, actually not. Zu etzricha lefnim. We've got to take this into the base medrash, to the deepest thinkers, to the biggest of the chachamim, have them analyze this. Why? Because hachasam chadaite, like we said before, our case of the sale, he relies on him, hachalosam chadaite, in this case, he does not rely on him. Have you heard of Pumpadisa? There's a story, a similar story, like this, Pumpadisa. Va'osve, and they asked this question, Amar lohu Rabbi Yosef, zu ein etzricha lefnim. You don't have to bother asking this question because, again, it's such a strong refutation. But Amar Lei, Abaya responded and said, actually not. Tzrich Lefnim, you got to bring it inside. Lefnai Lefnim, go bring it to the innermost chambers of the base medrash. Because Hachasam Chadaite, Hachalosam Chadaite. Again, the same discussion. There's a difference between a case where a person sells something that he does not yet own and a person sells something that he already stole. Because, as we said before, a person who sells something that he stole, he wants to protect himself. That's what we call the gazlan. And therefore, the person relies on the fact that he will ultimately take ownership on it, so he relies on it, and his sale is complete. Now, if you remember, in the question that we asked, we had two scenarios. Scenario one was the case where a person says he wants to sell to somebody something that he will eventually inherit, no timeline, just eventually, or he sells him something that will eventually come into his trap. That doesn't work. But if he uses the word hayom, that it will come into my trap today, or that he will inherit today, that does work. Gemara says, "Umayshna reisha, umayshna seifa." What's the difference? In both cases, at the time of the sale, he doesn't own it. Amar Rabbi Yochanan seifa, masha irish mi abba hayom mishum kvod aviv. In that case, where he's talking about what he's going to inherit today, it's for the honor of his father. And Rashi explains, last line in Rashi, "Kishahaya aviv goses v'tzarach mos the kvuraso." In the case where he knows he needs money, his father's about to pass away, he has to pay the burial expenses, he has to pay the funeral home, he has to pay for the tachrichin, he needs that money. So therefore, he's going to make sure that whatever he inherits transfers right away. So the person relies on the fact his father's dying, he's a ghost, he's on his deathbed. The property will come to him today, and he knows that the sale will be complete because this person needs the money, and therefore it's a real legitimate sale. The same thing is true. Masha talbim mitzdasei hayom, top of tezayinim with beis. The reason why that works is mishum kidechayov. Person saying today. You know why you're saying today? Because he needs the money today. He needs to be able to bring dinner home for his family, and therefore the person understands if he's selling what he's going to be trapping today. That's something I can rely on because the person needs to be able to bring a meal home, and it's a good sale. Amar Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, Amar Rav, the name of Rav. Ha'omer lechavero. Person tells his friend, Sade she'ani lokeach, a field that I'm going to eventually buy, likishe ekochena, kenuyi lecha me'akshav. I didn't yet make this deal. I'm working on it. I'm trying to get all the paperwork in order. Trying to crunch the numbers, have a couple details in the contract that have to be hashed out, but ultimately, likishek ochena, when the sale closes, and when it finalizes, kenuya lecha mi'akshav, it should be sold to you today. Halacha is, kana, he owns it. Amar Rava, Rava comments on this, and he says, mistavra, it seems to make sense that, when Rav Huna said this in the name of Rav, that a person could sell a field from today, that he's going to buy later, that's talking about a case, milsa derav besada stam. That's just if he says, you know, I'm a real estate guy, I'm eventually going to buy some fields, then in such a case it will work. Aval besada zu, if he points to a very specific field, low. It's not, he doesn't work. Why? He's not going to rely on him because mi yemar demazvin la nehalei. In other words, when you're talking about a very specific field, the odds are not so much in your favor. Because if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. There's no recourse. But if you're talking about just in general a field, there's always a field that's available to be bought. So therefore, the chances of the sale actually coming through are much higher when you give much more broad availability.
V'halokim, which is a very strong lashon of a shavua, a confidence that Amar Rav, Rav says this afilu b'sad zu, even when it comes to a very specific field, and again, the stakes are high and the chances of not working out because there's no other field to work on, but again, he even meant it when he was talking about a specific field. Because Mechdi, why is Rav saying this? Let's analyze, why is it that Rav allows a person to sell a field that he doesn't yet own? Because Rav Kaman Amro L'Shmaite K'Rav Meir. Rav was saying his memra, his statement was in accordance with the opinion of Rav Meir. Who's Rav Meir? To Omar, he says, Adamak Nadavar Slobal Olam. The person can actually sell something that doesn't yet exist. To Tanya, for it says in Raisa, the Omar L'Isha. Person says to a woman, I actually think that I learned this Gemara Daf Yom with you when we learned Maseches Kedushin. He says, "Iskachi li la'achar she'esgayer." You'll get married to me. You'll be mekudeshes to me after I convert, or la'achar she'esgayri. After you complete your conversion, you're going to be married to me. Again, at that point in time, they can't get married because one of them are not Jewish. La'achar she'eshtachrer. After I will be freed, I'll be emancipated from my master, or la'achar she'eshtachriri. After you get free. Or la'achar shayamas bailech. One of the most insensitive things for a person to say. A person goes to a woman and says, listen, I know your husband got a short amount of time left. After he's gone, I'm ready to go. Okay? La'achar shayachas lach yavimtech. After your yavama, when this woman falls to yibam, so she is zakuk to this yibam, she's not allowed to get married until chalitza happens and she frees herself up from the yibam. So he says, la'achar shatamas achosech. After your sister dies. This is even worse. What's this talking about? Let's talk about where a guy is married to a woman and his wife is not well. So he goes over to his sister-in-law, which actually this is the only case of arayus where the pasuk says b'chayeha. The issur to marry your sister-in-law is only while his wife is still alive. Once his wife passes, he's allowed to marry his sister-in-law. Unlike HS Ach, in this case, he's not allowed to marry your sister-in-law as long as his wife is alive. So he goes to his sister-in-law and says, listen, when your sister dies, you're going to be married to me. So again, at that point in time, it's an isser to get married. The kedushin is not going to work. But he's marrying her for after his wife, who's the sister of this girl, dies. Don't ever do that. Okay? Einam kedushas. The halacha is, einam kedushas. Rav Meir says, mekudeshes. Now, v'ha isha zu, sarva isha kisad zu. It's a very specific woman, and he's relying on a certain set of facts to come true in order for this specific woman to be married to him. Kisad zu damya v'ha meir v'kadesh. Rav Meir still said it's going to work. So clearly, Rav, who's following Rav Meir's opinion, even though there's no guarantee that it's going to actually come through. Nevertheless, it works. So therefore, even if a person says, I'm selling you this field for when I ultimately purchase it, according to Rav and according to Rav Meir, it's going to work. Amar Shmuel. Hamotzi shtar hakna b'shuk. If you remember, two daf ago, we talked about a shtar hakna. What's a shtar hakna? Shtar hakna is when a person writes a contract and commits himself prematurely to give over his assets, even though he didn't necessarily even borrow the money yet. So basically, he's meshabed himself to give over his property, even though there really is no loan that allows it to happen. We mentioned this before with regard to finding certain types of documents. Now the Gemara analyzes that case. Hamotzi shtar akna b'shuk. A person finds a shtar where a person obligated, he put his properties on lien in that document even before the loan. He finds such a document in the market, yachziru lebailim, he should return it to the proper owner. And Mark explains, why not? Because the imishum, the cost of lovos v'lo lava, what are you worried about? Why shouldn't you give it back? Because maybe he wrote the document with the intention to borrow money, but never actually borrowed money? Well, too bad. Hishabad nafshay. That's the point of a shtar hakna. A person prematurely obligates themselves to another person, understanding that there's a high level of risk that the loan may never actually take place. Why would a person do this? I don't know. But I guess for this person, for the purpose of this person's, whatever he's motivated for, maybe he thinks he has to write this in order to get the loan, so therefore he puts his properties on lien. That's the risk that he took, that he might not ever get the loan. But he ultimately obligated himself to this person. If you're worried that the actual loan did happen, but he paid it up, and therefore you're going to give back the shtar akna, you're going to give the ability to the lender to collect his properties illegally, well, the Gemara says, lo chashina l'paroyan. We're not worried about those kinds of things. Why? Dimisa depare, the guy actually paid up his loan, mikra havikarle, he should have ripped up the document. The fact that he did not rip up the document is an indication that he did not pay back. Amar Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman says, Abba, my father, min safri dayane demar shmuel havi. My father was one of the scribes who wrote the documents, wrote the contracts for the Beis Din of Shmuel. V'havi kvar shita kvar sheva, I was about 6 or 7 years old, v'docharna, and I remember, t'havi machrizi v'amar. They would make announcements that they would say, hani shtari akneyasa, demishtakhi v'shuka, nahadri l'marayu. I remember they would constantly announce in that Beis Din, if you find a shtar hakna in the shuk, give it back to the owner. Interestingly, it's not clear if what he's saying over here is like a halachic psak based off of this, or he's just backing up the psak that we said earlier. In other words, Shmuel told us, hamotzi shtar hakna b'shuk, yachzir l'baila. Now, clearly, we're talking about Shmuel's Beis Din, so we don't really need his testimony that that's what happened, because we have this line quoted from Shmuel, but he's saying he was 6 or 7. He's a katan, he's a child at that point in time. So it's hard to believe that his testimony would be accepted later to validate it, although 6 or 7 years old is an age where a child can start to comprehend what's going on. But again, it seems like he's just ultimately saying, yes, I actually remember this. My father worked in that Beis Din. I would come with my father to work. Every time it was bring your kids to work day. And I remember they'd have this announcement that would go out all the time. And they would say, when it comes to the Shtar Akna, you find it, give it back to the owner. Amr of Amram. Amram says, Afa na na mitnina. We learned this in a Mishnah as well. What does it say? It says, Kol Maisa Beis Din. Any action, any real, legitimate, sanctioned document from Beis Din, Harezeh Yachzer, should be returned. Almaloch Hashim Liparayim, we see, we're not worried about things being paid off. Amar Leir Zera, that's not true. You don't have a raya from there, because Masnisin, that mission that you mentioned, was Bishtari Chaltasa Vadrachta, Dalav B'nei Parayinu. That line that you're quoting, that it says, a Maisa Beis Din should be returned in, should be returned, is not talking about a case where it's a document that is dealing with payment. What it's talking about is a document that was used to substantiate a property transfer. The Rashi says, "Bishtari chaltasa." It's star shakasvu based in lemotzi star al chavero. The person took out a document on his friend. V'chayvu l'shalem v'lo shile. He was obligated to pay but didn't. The yardu l'nechasav, they ultimately went to his property. The shamu l'bal chov echad mehem, the nasnu lo shtar shall be based in balo. This is talking about a case where a person owes money. He did not pay it back. The case went to Beis Din. Beis Din said, you know what? We're going to write a document saying we're evaluating the person's property, and that's the property that you could ultimately collect from. And what's the drachta? A drachta is the document that actually affirms that transfer. Now, those documents are not documents that are used to extract money from somebody. Why? Because those documents are used just to ultimately affirm that a transfer took place. Amarava, is that really true? Tahani lav b'nei parayinu. Are those documents not documents that can be used for payment? V'amri nardai. Nardai taught us, shuma hadar, that if based and evaluate someone's field. And the person ultimately wants to pay money instead of it, he could reverse that valuation. Ad tracer yarchishata, up until a year. So again, let's just analyze the case. Reuven borrows money from Shimon, and he can't pay it up. So Shimon says, listen, Reuven, I need the money. If you're not going to pay me up, we'll go to Beis Din. They go to Beis Din. Reuven says, I can't pay. So Beis Din evaluates Reuven's fields and says, here, we're going to sign this document that this field now goes to Shimon. He has to pay up with his real estate. Now, the halacha is, up until 12 months, he could reverse that. He could buy it back. So you see clearly that that document does have some type of monetary collecting power. Avamar HaMemar, HaMemar said, Anami Nardana, I'm from Nardana V'sfira Li, and I'm of the opinion, Deshuma Hadar, that this evaluation can be reversed by buying it back. The Gemara says, La'olam, sorry, Deshuma Hadar La'olam, it goes back forever. El Amar Rav, Rav says, Hasam Hainu Taima. The reason why we don't give it back, or we do give it back, is because the Amri Ihu Hu Da Nafs Afsada Nafse. He himself is responsible for this. He's the one who loses out. Why? Idna depare, the moment that he paid him up with this property, Iboile Lemikri Shtara. He should have torn up this document. The fact that he didn't tear it up is his own problem. So it's not that we're worried about Pirayan, that we're worried about it being paid up. We're worried about the fact, in other words, it's his problem. He paid up, he got the document back, should have torn up this document, which would be a problem. The fact that he didn't tear it up is his own problem. Inami l'michtav shtara chrina ilvei. He should have written another document about the transfer. So listen, I owe you money, but ultimately, there's another document that says I paid you up by giving you my property. And the Gemara explains, the Medina ara lo boy l'mahader. Really, from the halachic perspective, he doesn't have to give back the land. Rather, umishum dvasisa yasher bato b'nei Hashem, hu d'amar rabbanan tihadr. What's the reason that we allow the person to be able to buy back his property? Is because there's a pasuk that says vasisa yasher bato b'nei Hashem, recognizing that a person borrowed money because he needed money, and recognizing the person was honest, he tried to pay back the loan but he couldn't, and he paid back the loan with his real estate. And recognizing that's a very unfortunate situation, but the pasuk says, "Vasisa yasher v'atov." Recognize you should do what's right and just. This person really needs his property. He wants his property. He never had intention to lose the property. Now he has money. Do the right thing. Let the guy buy back his property. But the reality is, in the vasisa yasher v'atov, doing what's right and just in this case is really selling him back his property. It's a brand new sale. So therefore, Hilkach me Resha, who de Kazavin? He's really selling it back as a brand new sale. He should have written a new document. In other words, what we're explaining over here is that the reason why you can give back these documents is because there should be no problem that comes out from it. The fact that the document is there, maybe he bought it back. Maybe he did buy it back. But ultimately, if you bought it back, you should have written a new document. If you have all the documents in place, nobody will lose out. Gabi Shtar Chov Meikul Amemar. What should we say about a case where there's a Shtar Chov, where a person is actually finding a document of a loan on the street? In such a case, Meikul Amemar, Emis Depari, Iboile Lemikri Lishtara. In other words, what you're saying is you can always return a loan document, because if he paid up, he should have torn it up. Problem is, Amar Shtamuti Kamishtamitle. Maybe the lender didn't give it back to him right away. Maybe he was saying to him, you know what? Thank you for paying up the loan. I'll give it back to you tomorrow. I don't have it here. It's at home in my file cabinet. But I'll come to shul tomorrow morning. I'll bring it to you. And the next day says, ooh, I'm so sorry. I forgot to bring it. You know what? Give me till next week to find it. Keeps pushing him off. So he paid back the loan because he wants to pay back the loan. Maybe he just didn't get the document. So now the guy dropped, the lender drops the document. You're saying you can give the document back to him. You can give him the power to collect twice. And he says, Damrali says to him, Lamachar, tomorrow you have nalach. The Gemara says, Dahashta lese gaboy, inami apshiti desafra zarele. It's possible that in those cases he's holding it back because he wants to charge him the fees that are he incurred to actually get it written. Amar Rav Avoh. Amr Rabbi Yochanan. Ravo says name Rav Yochanan. Motzei shtar chov bashuk. A person finds a loan document in the street. Afalpi shekasa bohenpik. Even though it has the stamp, the seal of Beis Din on it, lo yachziru lepilot. Should not give it back to the pilot. So this clearly does not agree with Shmuel. Shmuel said earlier, you give it back. Here he says, you find a document that has a seal of Beis Din on it, don't give it back. Lo miba, you don't even have to point out, hecha delo kasav bohempik. In a case where it's not a verified document, the ikulimim or kasav lovas velo lava. You could even say that, you know what? The reason why you shouldn't give it back is because maybe the whole thing never happened. The document was written, but it was never stamped and affirmed by Beis Din, and therefore you actually never borrowed the money. Elafilu kasavo hempik, even if it actually has the stamp and the seal of Beis Din, he should not give it back. Umai nihu demekoyim. That means that it's actually verified. Lo yachzer, don't give it back. Why the chashinan were worried, lepi rayin, that it was paid back. Mar says, Eisvei, Rabbi Yirmiyah or Rabbi Avoh. Rabbi Yirmiyah asked the following questions for Rabbi Avoh. It says, kol ma'aseh beis din reza yachzer. We learned earlier that anything which is a ma'aseh beis din, anything that has Beis Din's signature on it, should be given back. Amalei Rabbi Avoh, Amalei, Yirmiyah Bri, Yirmiyah my son. Yirmiyah was not his son. But he still used the language of my son. Lo kol ma'aseh beis din shavin. Not all actions of Beis Din are the same. Elakagon shahuch zakafron. This is talking about a case where the guy is an established liar. He perjured himself once before. He lied before, and therefore in that case we don't take his word for it. You're telling me that just because a guy was caught lying once, that means he's never going to pay back again, and therefore you're always going to give back documents to the lender because you assume the guy doesn't pay? It's again, our Mishnah is not talking about a loan document. That case is not talking about a loan document. It's talking about a case where it was a Beis Din document affirming something happened. We'll stop here. And Amir Tashem tomorrow, and Kamen Akiva giving shir tomorrow. Kamen Akiva will take you through this very interesting Gemara tomorrow. I'll see everybody on Sunday. Have a good Shabbos.